This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It was a special year, all things considered. And a new experience for me, Draymond Loon. Tried to make the most of it. Come back, bottle this up, everybody make the right strides, take advantage of the summer, and don't want to see us next year.
To get through three rounds of the playoffs, beating the best teams in the league to get there, it's frankly, it's exhausting, stressful, emotional, physically tiring, all of that stuff. And, you know, for our team, our guys, especially the core group, Dre and Steph, Clay, Loon, Andre, to be part of that, six times in 8 years, I don't even know what to say. It just takes an enormous amount of skill and determination and work. And I couldn't be proud of our guys.
We never lost the faith, but you understood how long or how hard of a process was going to be to climb the mountain again. It's built on years and years and years of experience, and you know the chemistry that we've built, and the fact that I don't know what I can't remember what the number was, but you know, since the 2019 finals, how many days it was that me, Clay, Draymond hadn't even, you know, played on the same court. But once we got healthy, we could pick up right where we left off and find a way to continue to get better through this playoff run to peak at the right time.
And no one has proven that they can move us off that spot. And that's the mindset that we come into this thing with. We understand what it takes to win a championship. We understand the process and how you have to get better throughout the course of the season. You know, it's not just about winning games throughout the regular season. You know, that's anybody can just win games throughout the regular season. Teams make mistakes. Most teams in the NBA just aren't that good. You know, so you can win games in the regular season. That means nothing. You know, and we understand that. And so we don't chase wins during the regular season. We chase improvement during the regular season. And I think we've done that.
It's definitely a moment I'm going to enjoy tonight with my family and my friends. They were there during the dog days. You know, it was like 1,000 calf raises a day. And, you know, it was painful at times, but I just saw this in sight and kept going. And just proud of not only my effort, but our whole team. Like, we really gelled this year at the right time. And we have exciting times ahead of us.
Each player has a unique individual background and story, and I'm happy for all of them, but it's hard not to be most excited for Clay given what he's been through, the two-year absence, the fight that he's been through to get back to this point. Just incredible accomplishment for him, and for him to be a part of it, he's just so happy again. It's wonderful to see.
Clay is a dog, and you know, I've said it over and over again. You know, he's going to fight, he's going to battle no matter what it is, and most important thing to him is always to win. And you know, to take the floor like that with a guy every night, you know, you could see how much it was missing over the last couple of years, you know, and to have him back and you know, still not 100% back to Klay Thompson that we know, but working his way there, it's very special. And, you know, we're lucky to have him back next to us competing with us, because we know, like I said, we know we're capable of when he is there.
And Mike, the one of the biggest compliments you can give somebody is they make difficult things look easy. You don't realize how difficult it is until you try to do it yourself, or you try to ask somebody else to do it. and they look at you like you're crazy and say, no, I can't do that. Why do you have that expectation? Why do you have that expectation? The Golden State Warriors have made this look easy. And by this, I mean the entire run, because the run has different iterations and has different nuances and different quirks and different turns. And they made it all look seamless. Let's start from the beginning, where they went from this team, this homegrown team primarily, Mike, but throwing Andre Iguodala as a smart free agent signing. But these guys right here were drafted. Draymond Green, second round. Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, first round picks. They're drafted. The core of this team goes to the championship, wins it against Cleveland, then loses after winning 73 games. After winning 73 games, by the way. They lose it. They incorporate a free agent like Kevin Durant, and it seems like he grew up with them. He fit right in, at least on the court. Maybe off the court was a different story. They win a couple more. They go down to the shadow of the Valley of Death. They miss the playoffs 2 years. Finish with one of the worst records in the league one of those years. Get lottery picks. Bring Klay Thompson back for 32 games this year. And, hey, how you doing? Back in the NBA Finals for the sixth time in 8 years? This is incredible. They are freaks. I say they're freaks of the industry because it's a shout-out to the East Bay, shout-out to Oakland, shout-out to San Francisco, Digital Underground, but different context here. This is freaky what they're doing. And I didn't even mention the head coach who was with one of the greatest dynasties as a player, the Bulls, and now is with one of the greatest dynasties as a head coach. My salute, my hats off, bow down, whatever you want to do for the Golden State Warriors, whatever your salutation, your greeting and salutation and sign of respect is to the Golden State Warriors, I'm going to give it to them. Incredible job. Props.
Yeah, I'll go back to that Bulls dynasty. Jerry Krause, and he, of course, caught a lot of flack for this when he said it, and certainly caught a lot more flack for it when it was a big part of the Last Dance documentary, is when he said that players don't win championships, organizations win championships. And right church, wrong pew, or might not even be the right phrasing for it. He just chose the wrong word. He should have said culture wins championships. And that's what I think about when I look at these Warriors and all the iterations of this dynasty. And I just think about the culture. I think about how it's clear that everybody is pulling in the same direction from the top down. It's clear that even though they may be competitive and competitors, they don't have egos, at least at the expense of one another. You know, Steph Curry, a lot of people, there's multiple definitions of the word humble and humility. And a lot of people confuse, you know, humility with, you know, meekness or just being nice and quiet or soft-spoken. And so when you see Steph shimmy or when you see him do the night-night or when you see him turn around after shooting a three, it's like, oh, he ain't humble. He's an a-hole. Well, you can be both. Because as a leader and as a culture setter, that humility is what drives these Warriors. You mentioned it. To go from what they were when they were the homegrown Warriors and everybody kind of loved this up-and-coming fun-loving team to being the hated Warriors when they infused Kevin Durant, they never got enough credit. And I don't know that Steph got enough credit. In fact, Steph got a demerit in some people's minds, unfortunately, for adding Kevin Durant and riding shotgun, if not taking a back seat in some occasions, the finals in particular, to Kevin Durant. People looked at that as a reason to knock Steph Curry and his greatness, as opposed to looking at it from the standpoint of, he's so good that he made life easier for Kevin Durant and yes, moved over seamlessly to incorporate Kevin Durant. So yeah, then he goes through, they go through that 2 year odyssey that you referenced. One where everybody was hurt, and the other one where Steph came back and showed you how great he could be flying solo, so to speak. All right. When he was in the MVP conversation. Then he comes in this year and makes more adjustments and more accommodations. And it's not just Steph Curry, but it, of course, starts with Steph Curry, at least among the players. But all the while, led by Steph Curry, this organization stayed the course. I mean, they could have blown it up. They could have tried to go for the quick fix. Instead, they took what came to them, and they made the most of it in drafting Wiseman, Kuminga, and Moody, and, of course, developing Jordan Poole, man. So I just, you know, I think that the hat's off. The Western Conference champion hat goes off or is tipped to everybody from Joe Lacob to Bob Myers to Steve Kerr and to this core that is really just kind of stuck together in a unique way. Because you know this, Michael, NBA historian that you are, not every championship core gets along, and they don't have to. You know
right.
what I'm saying? Like,
that's right.
You don't have to get, you just got to work together on the court and we could all be successful. But not only do they thrive on the court, they seem to love and pull for one another off the court. Like, that's genuine, this love they have for Klay Thompson, you know, who Draymond may be the heartbeat of the team, but I would say the soul of the team might be Klay Thompson, one of the most beloved figures in the NBA. To watch them celebrate him last night and just to watch his comeback, you want to talk about inspirational, man. Talk about the valley of the shadow of death. His injury, or his second injury, I should say, was really what we thought was the last night of the Warriors dynasty. I think it came out around the draft, that news that he had torn his ACL after tearing his Achilles in the final. And so for him to come back and be the player that he is, and again, everybody is fine not being in the spotlight. And yet, here they are once again back in the limelight. Just an incredible story of culture, incredible story of shared commitment. I'm one of those people, Michael. A lot of people get bored with greatness. They get bored with reruns. See, I'm one of those people that watch the same movie over and over again, as you know. You know what I mean? Right. That's why I can quote them so well. I don't mind seeing reruns. I don't mind greatness because I'm more of an appreciator than I am a hater. So this is an opportunity to appreciate this journey from 2015 to 2022 and say, wait, what are they doing so well that not only the rest of the league can learn from, but we could all learn from in whatever walk of life, you know, that we're in, whatever arena we're in. We may not be in the NBA arena, but there's lessons to be learned about how to lead, how to follow, how to stay the course, how to believe, how to unite, how to share. I mean, it's really, put it this way. There's not going to be a documentary where somebody, or a book written 10, 20 years from now, where somebody's like, man, I really couldn't stand that guy. Or that guy was jealous, or I didn't get what I deserved from the media. Yep. Or I was a better player than I got credit. None of that. You ain't seeing none of that with this group. Ain't no dirty laundry to be aired with this group. The closest thing was when Kevin Durant and Draymond kind of like, you know, they had their clash toward the end. But other than that, this is not only a dynasty, this is the prototypical dynasty. This is a flagship franchise. This is the model organization, not just in the NBA, but perhaps in all the professional sports right now.
Yeah, they make it look good. And it's funny, the reason I start smiling at the very beginning of your comments when you said, when you made that reference to Jerry Krause, God is my witness. No, God is my witness. Oh, did I know where you were going? This morning, I was about to write in a feed, organizations indeed win championships. I was about to say it. I was about to make a reference to that and flip it around. Yeah. And it's funny how you bring in the Bulls, too, with the Last Dance. And you mentioned Michael. So Michael did it, too. They won 6 in 8, which is just crazy. They won 6 championships in 8 years. But it's different. It's a different feel, as you just referenced. Like Horace Grant and Michael Jordan, they ain't cool. Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, they ain't cool. So there's some people at their core, they were homegrown too, but as Klay Thompson quotes John Wooden and says, it's amazing what you can accomplish when nobody is worried about who gets the credit. Yeah. So that's the difference between the Bulls and the Warriors. So, look,
They're very Spurs-like.
Right,
Michael?
Did Jordan need the credit? Did Jordan need the credit? Or he was fine with all the credit he was getting? Was it his teammates who were saying, well, wait a minute, man. Why don't you put in a good word for a brother? when you're up there during your press conferences, instead of saying my supporting cast, stop talking like that. You know, why don't you give us some love? I don't know what the dynamics were internally, but I know that's not the issue with the Golden State Warriors. And you're right, Spurs, where Steve Kerr also has a background. The Spurs weren't like that.
Right.
The Spurs, it was
they had Popovich, Duncan,
Robinson, yeah, all those guys, Manu, Parker, and it was just it was cool.
And,
they had a lot
That's not to say that the Bulls' way, it obviously worked, or the Lakers' way, you know, with Shaq and rest in peace Kobe Bryant, it obviously worked. But this is just, and it's also fun to watch the evolution of how this team is covered, is dissected, is discussed. Because as you know, they were young and cute. We went over this before. They went from young and cute to, like, once they started winning too much, people started hating them. And then when they added Kevin Durant, and I'll come back to that in a second, people really hated on him. Oh, you got to get Kevin Durant in order to beat LeBron James. And then they fell off, and we thought the dynasty, or some people thought the dynasty was over. And then they come back, and now we appreciate Steph as he's putting on a show, you know, trying to, you know, fight the good fight practically by himself from an offensive standpoint last year, getting him to the play-in, but not the playoffs for a second straight year. And then back to this year, where early in the year, it's like, oh, okay, this team is fun again. This team is lovable again. We could root for this team again, says some of the former haters, some of the reformed haters. We can root for this group again. And early in the season, to say that nobody thought they'd be here, at least this year, I'm not talking about the last 3 years or what have you, but this year, that's not true. Because early in the year, everybody thought they get Klay back and he's an approximation of what he used to be. They're going to be a problem in the playoffs. We didn't see Jordan Poole coming like this or even Andrew Wiggins doing this in the playoffs. But and even we talked about the other day, Wiggins and what he's become, all because of the culture here. You know what I mean? So, you know, this is why, man, I'm reluctant to, like, declare, make definitive declarations when it comes to special people. Like, I don't have the receipts, but you and I had some discussions over the last couple of years about...
I'm walking out now. I mean,
you going to say the same thing? You going to say the same thing? Again? That's two?
On a different topic. Absolutely.
What topic? Go ahead. What topic?
I was going to say it just like that. Way down the bottom, hip-hop. In hip-hop, I told you yesterday, I sent you a text yesterday off a Common Freestyle. I heard it on Power 106 in L.A., keep it in California. The L.A. Leakers. You ever hear that? It's like they just bring MCs on and just have them freestyle. I heard a Common Freestyle. It was so dope, 8 minutes. It was incredible. And I was like, you know what? During his shout-out, he was thanking them for inviting him on the show. During his shout-out, he was like, hey, Common is like, hey, I just want to shout out all the people who have been here. Shout out KRS-One. Shout out Rakim. Shout out Big. Shout out Andre 3000. He's going on and on. I'm like, you know what? I'm done. I'm done with top fives in hip hop. Over. I will never do it again. There is no top five for me in hip hop. There's just too many great people to trivialize what they've done.
So you're talking about the declaration part.
Yeah, the declaration.
That's the word. Yeah. Okay, I got you. All right, okay.
Yeah, it's too many, like, oh, this is the best MC, or he's a top five MC. Right. Oh, he's not top five. She's not top five. It's too many people, and it's too much greatness for us to just kind of compartmentalize
aside. I really like, that's a great job of sticking a little sidebar in there. That was an awesome sidebar. I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about the declaration of they're done. The dynasty's dead. I'm sure you remember those conversations that you and I had. I'm like, I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so certain about that because, and it was all big ifs, granted. It was big ifs. But if Klay can come back, Steph will be Steph. Why can't they compete for championships? Did I think it would be a matter of one season? No, because I mean, you know, in the time we've been on the air, they've been a borderline playoff team last year and now back in the NBA finals. So it happened faster than I thought. My point is, when you have people like this to say what they won't do, can't do, or are done doing definitively, I think is a mistake a lot of times.
Yes.
But another mistake that we made is with Kevin Durant. And again, I say we, but a lot of people looked at it through the prism of Durant, from a negative perspective, I should say, both Durant and the Warriors. Durant, that, you know, oh, you couldn't beat him, so you joined him. You know, you blew the 3-1 lead. Now you go join a team that beat you in the Western Conference Finals that year. And then from the Warriors' perspective, it's like, oh, don't y'all have enough? Do y'all have to get Kevin Durant too? That's the only way you're around LeBron James, go get the second best or even the best player in the world? When really it was a commentary and a reflection of just how fun it is to be a part of that group, you know, and how much Durant at the time, now he left, but at the time was like, I just want to be a part of that, you know, or the Warriors being like, hey, why not add somebody who is not, it's not the quick fix that it is for a lot of teams. A lot of teams, like, their chemistry is so incredible that it could sustain, or it could survive these various iterations. Like, even making room for Jordan Poole, for crying out loud. You know, I mean, it's just incredible how everybody eats B with the Golden State Warriors. Whereas, you know, a lot of other teams are like, oh, if we get this star, and voila, we got a championship. Like, this team has managed to marry being both homegrown and being aggressive when it comes to additions and spending money in a way that few, if any, other franchise has.
And listen, I mean, they've done some maneuvering here now. It's like, you know, we've kind of...
No question. They ain't just sat on their hands.
We kind of glossed over it. But how about at one point, let's talk about some of the people who were Warriors. At one point, D'Angelo Russell was a Golden State Warrior.
Right. Who they flipped for Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah, they bring in D'Angelo Russell. They make that trade, and they bring him back. And then at the very beginning of the dynasty, they really have been, here's the word I want to use, very intentionally use this word with the Golden State Warriors. They've been blessed. They've been blessed. They really have. I mean, you think about their story. They've had, so Iguodala is a free agent. It's very rare to get a free agent like that who was raised in another organization and who becomes known. I don't think about Iguodala as a Sixer. I don't think about Iguodala as a Nugget. Not as a Nugget.
Oh, look at the guy.
Iguodala is a Warrior.
Look at the guy who handed Steph Curry the Magic Johnson Western Conference Finals MVP trophy, Sean Livingston. You know, I mean, Harrison Barnes, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
It really just comes down to people. I'm telling you, man, people are going to rue some of those days. And there's a lot of, as they say nowadays, freezing cold takes about Steph Curry and his greatness, or in some cases, his overratedness, let some people tell it. This is a bad day for a lot of people, but it's a great day for sports. It's a great day for the NBA that the Warriors are back in the NBA Finals.
It's so good. I'm so happy for him. I might spit a freestyle right now. Turn my levels up. What's up?
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Here,
bro. It's LeBron.
Oh,
And I tell you what, Michael and Mark Spears from Anscape, with every news update from Texas, I can't tell you how much I needed to see that scene from a school. That's what school is supposed to be about. That is what it's all about. Usually this time of year, at least over the last 15 years, LeBron James, we're talking about him in the finals. Obviously, he's not there, but yet he's still winning nonetheless. And Spears, listen, before we get to the conference finals, the Warriors, and then whatever's left of the Eastern Conference Finals, let's, while we're on the subject of LeBron, let's touch on the people chasing the Warriors once again, starting with the Lakers. I'm curious, what do you have, what do you know about their head coaching search?
Not a lot, bro. They're keeping it real, real close to the vest.
Sometimes it's
Darvin
that simple.
Hey, man. I ain't got a lie, right? Just somebody I'm really, really intrigued by. You know, former assistant coach there certainly is paid his dues. I know that they're, in terms of David Fizdale and Phil Handy, the guys on staff that probably should get a look. They're not getting a look, which is certainly disappointing for some other guys who have been paying their dues as well. But it's a very, very long search, interesting search in terms of LeBron James' impact on it. I'm not quite certain how much they're letting him be involved in it. But obviously, if Mark Jackson is someone that's interviewed, you know, that certainly has LeBron James written all over it. So it's kind of went a little longer than perhaps it should. You would think that they would like to get someone in before the draft. So yeah. I would expect sooner rather than later they would get this done.
And then on a, you know, somewhat related note, some people have viewed him as maybe the next LeBron from a skill set standpoint. Of course, Luka Doncic exceeded expectations from a playoff standpoint with going to the Western Conference Finals, I beg your pardon. Jason Kidd had some comments last night that many took as a referendum or commentary on what Luka still needs to improve upon if the Mavericks want to be regulars this time of year. Here's Jason Kidd, and we'll get your reaction to that.
Well, no one had us playing at the end of May, but those guys in that locker room believed that they can compete and play at a high level. Now it's about what's our appetite come next season. Are we going to just tiptoe into the season, or are we going to be hungry? And then are we going to train this summer to understand what it means to play into May and June? Because it's a long season.
What did you take from that comment, Spears? And how do the Mavs take it to the next level?
Well, I mean, I guess you could vaguely think it's about the whole team, but maybe as you guys seem to be alluding to it, I would agree with it that he's, you know, talking about Luka. He seemed to tire as the game went on. And in order to be, I think, elite in this league, LeBron James certainly learned it from Kobe when he went to the 2008 Olympics. You got to be in an elite shape. And so, you know, you can't just be young and think that's good enough. I mean, that's what's kept Chris Paul's longevity in the league, kept Melo around, is, you know, they're probably much lighter than they were at the beginning of their careers. So I think Luka needs help. And I believe Nico Harrison, the president, Michael Finley, will get that help for him. But on this level, man, yeah, you have to be on tip-top shape. And I think another thing that Jason Kidd has been pushing for him is to be a better defender and push him to be great on both ends and not just one end of the court.
Yeah, that's true. I'm wondering, Mark, because of your background with the East Bay, you know this area very well. The Warriors winning. What does it mean? What does it mean to that franchise, longtime followers, especially of that franchise? They were beaten down for a while. They always had good players come in. They lose the good players. Going back to the Run TMC days to just on and on. Chris Webber, they had a lot of good players come through there, but they were never able to put it together. What is this? This sixth, championship appearance. What does this mean for that area?
Well, for the kids, y'all kids' age, they think this is the norm, right? But I remember growing up in the Bay in the lean years, watching on black and white TV channel 36. They're horrible. They're horrible for a long time. And the fans here would get excited if they, man, they're only four games out of the eight spot with a month left. Maybe they, you know, that word was the expectations. And now the expectations are such that it's championship or bust. And so it's been amazing turnaround for them. If you didn't know better, you know, this has been the case for a while because of Steph Curry, because of Klay, because of Draymond. And if you look at the young guys on their team, like, this isn't coming to an end. The window is not closing. This isn't the end. Like, Wiggins is 27. Poole, I think he could drink. He barely could drink now, right? You know, Kuminga, Moody. And look, the same thing that happened to Joel Embiid, where he missed the first couple of years and then became a superstar, I think it's going to happen with James Wiseman. I really believe that James Wiseman's going to be a problem in this league once he could get healthy. And they certainly could use him right now. So, no, this isn't the end. This isn't the end. I see them contending for several years to come. And this is a Spurs-like dynasty where you have stars like David Robinson to Tim Duncan to Tony and Ginobili to Kawhi pass the torch around for about two decades before the well run ran dry.
So they're back in the finals for a sixth time in 8 years. But there's a little bit of business left, and that is to win the whole thing before we start celebrating a return. As Draymond said last night, as we all expect, based on the last game, based on the way the series is playing out, it looks like it's going to be the Celtics. But I struggled to – I know Michael agrees with this. I struggled to assume that the Celtics will get this over with. I mean, you know, or is have the Heat – talk about being run down and being, you know, just beat up. Have the Heat just simply run out of gas – and we're looking at a potentially classic Warriors-Celtics final.
I'm not giving up on the Heat. Jimmy Butler is great with his back against the wall. I know the Heat culture. They're going to fight.
Yeah, right?
P.J. Tucker's going to fight. Kyle Lowry's going to fight. I also do know, and you guys do know this, that playing in Boston can be one of the more intimidating places to play in the league. When you're the visiting team and when you're the home team, they lift you up when you're down. They keep you in it. They keep you energized. So there's definitely an amazingly large home court advantage here that if the Celtics do take a lead, that energy could lead them back to the finals. But there is certainly some pressure, and you guys know this, man. There's nothing like walking into that venue and seeing all those banners on top of you, seeing all them retired jerseys, and knowing the standard that comes with wearing that Boston Celtics uniform. So to me, this is that kid you're showing right now, Tatum, night. This is his trademark night where he walks into the door with Larry Bird, Havlicek, other great small forwards, and that franchise's history. He has to lead them there. And I definitely think that, one, he has the talent to do it, but two, he needs to do it because this team needs rest. They don't need to play in a game seven. They don't need to go down to Miami and then fly. They got to fly across the country, whatever team wins. So they need to, man, they need to get that training room and turn it off for a second. You know, trust me, Draymond Green going to have a real nice bottle of wine tonight watching that game with his feet up and his little boy next to him, right? Like, they're resting, and Gary Payton's going to be back. Porter's going to be back. The Celtics need that rest too if they want to win a championship.
Spears, of these two teams, my last question for you before we let you go. Between these two teams, who matches up best with the Warriors?
You would think that the Celtics did, because everybody points to their size, but the Celtics were also 21st in points in the paint in the league. So I think their size can be deceptive. I think it's helpful for them defensively because, you know, in terms of Robert Williams, if he's healthy and a shot blocking sense, and, you know, Theis, if he's healthy, you know, Horford, But I do think that an Adebayo would probably give him more problems inside. I don't think the Warriors right now have anything to stop that. Jimmy Butler is a problem. The defense of PJ. So as crazy as this might sound, I mean, they're both a problem. I think Miami probably matches up a little better if they're healthy.
All right. Good to see you healthy, brother. Thank you so much.
Surprised you, huh?
From Manscaped.
Great artwork.
A little bit. Yes. Exceptional artwork. All right, man. We'll talk to you later. Take it
easy. And that sign, too, by the way.
Ooh. Oh, that's a flex. That's a flex.
Sounds like State represent.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
All right, it is time for our Axe interview of the week, and who better to spend some time with than our dear friend, Dr. Myron Roll. I mean, the dude's resume is just unparalleled. A neurosurgeon, a former NFL player, a Rhodes Scholar. I mean, and listen, I go back with Myron Roll. He's been my role model. Since he was a Rhodes Scholar, I believe that's when you and I first met. And I said back then, I wanted to grow up and be like you and what you've done in the years since, including the publication of your book, The 2% Way, How a Philosophy of Small Improvements. Wait, let me get this right. How a Philosophy of Small Improvements Took Me to Oxford, the NFL, and Neurosurgery. This should be on everybody's reading list if you want to know how to tackle life the way that Myron Roll has in various arenas, whether it's football, whether it's philanthropy, and of course, medicine. But here's where I want to start with you, Myron, and thank you so much for being here, man. I saw you talk about recently in an interview about the vulnerability you display in this book when it comes to the self-doubt, the uncertainty, and the social awkwardness that you've experienced over the years. And I said to myself, wow. Like, this is a guy who on the outside, like, looks like he's got it all together and could walk into any room and feel comfortable. How did you push through those battles with self-doubt and uncertainty and insecurity?
Well, you know, that's one of the blessings of this book, Mike. You know, it's just you have this opportunity to be very vulnerable and open and transparent with readers about the challenges and the struggles that you faced. I remember coming down as a prep school kid in New Jersey, down to Florida State, Tallahassee, Florida, where a lot of my teammates had dreadlocks, gold teeth, listening to Plies and Trick Daddy and eating country fried steak. I mean, just the culture was so different than what I was used to. And then hopping over to England at Oxford as a Rhodes Scholar and being feeling like a little bit like a jock when you have people who have got 9 degrees and have been published 17 times and, you know, are written about in Nature or a Science magazine or something like that. So always feeling like a little bit boxed out or a little bit uncomfortable. And the way that I felt I was able to mitigate that feeling of awkwardness or that feeling of discomfort or dis-ease was applying this 2% way, this process of just saying, you know what, let me just get a little bit better at something that I know I can improve on every single day, those consistent steps towards being a better version of myself, and then finding that common ground with those around me so that I'm able to have peace and continue to move forward.
When were you able to enjoy your first small win? Because I'm sure we all have small wins. We don't necessarily look at it in the moment. Then you look back and you say, wait a minute, that was significant. I kind of glossed that over. I didn't celebrate that enough. When did you get to that point where you were aware of the small wins that you had and you were able to celebrate them?
You know, so I learned the 2% way process from my coach at Florida State University, my defensive back coach, D coordinator, Mickey Andrews. He wanted us to get a little bit better every day in practice, our stamina, our ability to tackle, our ability to high point the football. And I extrapolated that mindset of just feeling like I can take small steps and breaking down a bigger goal and feel good about myself in doing it. And so when I applied for the Rhodes Scholarship, the first time I went through my interview process, I did terribly. I was unprepared. I was egotistical and arrogant. I went in just not ready to perform at my optimum. And I took that 2% way process of activating and mobilizing resources around me. I found a Rhodes Scholar who could help do a mock interview with me to get me ready. I read articles. I was watching CNN and all the late night news so I can stay up on current events. I would talk to people around Waffle House and around Tallahassee community about the Rhodes Scholarship and try to get my words out and enunciate as best I possibly could. And I saw those small steps every day end up in me winning that scholarship and changing my life and making me a role model for young people around the country and even around the world. So it was definitely a blessing. And I think that was the first time that I've seen that process take hold and get me from point A to point B seamlessly.
You seem to have the world. And again, man, I've been impressed with you for the first time I heard about you, and even more so when I got a chance to finally meet you. I don't know how many years ago that was now, almost 20 years ago, feels like. You seem to have the world in the palm of your hand and seem to just have, such direction and such, self-awareness about it. And then you're doing everything that you seem to put your mind to, I guess I would say. So even right now, even as you write the book and you pass along this 2% way wisdom to others, what are you getting better at 2% each day right now in your own, either professional or personal life, as the case may be?
Well, it's a great question. Yeah, I think for me, I'm always trying to get better as a father. We had talked, off air about, being a new dad again, a second time. I have twins of 21 months, and new twins are 33 weeks old. So
y'all like trying to balance. Y'all like that. Twos in y'all family. You're all about everything good for you comes in twos. Twins twice in 2% way. I feel you. I like it. That's on brand. Congratulations.
That's right. Thank you. Well, definitely congrats to my wife, mostly. I mean, she's a rock star. She's amazing. I just do what she says, Smart man. So, being a father and trying to improve, how I'm leading this home in this Christian environment that we're in, trying to improve my foundation, my philanthropic efforts back home in the Bahamas and around the Caribbean, delivering equitable and timely, accessible neurosurgical care for the most vulnerable populations, those marginalized populations in lower middle income countries in that region. So there's a lot, that we're doing, but thankfully, by the grace of God, I've been able to stay on balance, stay on beat, and continue to move forward every day by having people who can check in on me, make sure I'm doing well, praying, writing things down, checking it off, and then having that moment of self-reflection, like, did I get better today? Have I moved forward? And then tracking my progress every month or 6 months to say, yes, I have gotten better, and I am a better version of myself, better today than I was yesterday, for sure.
Man, that's such a word. Can you tell us a little bit more about LaToya, who herself is a pediatric dentist? Okay, so it's like, I'm sure you appreciate the phrase that we love to use when it comes to our wives. You definitely outkick your coverage as a former player yourself. You know what we're talking about. I mean, just what kind of woman is she? Because I imagine she makes you better as a father, as a husband, as a neurosurgeon, as a partner. Like, just tell us more about the relationship that you guys have.
Well, LaToya is all that. She's a queen. She's my rock. She's phenomenal. It was the hardest time of my life when the pandemic hit. And, she was pregnant with our first set of twins, and I sent her down to be in Georgia with her family because I was afraid that I would infect her and that somehow would infect the kids that were unborn at the time. So that 3, 4, 5 months that we were separated was very difficult to try to mitigate some of the pressure that I had in the hospital. She's somebody who I can decompress with. I can just be unfiltered with and talk through a lot of challenges. And when she wasn't there, based on the pandemic, it was tough. But she's a rock. She's amazing. She went to Tennessee State University, HBCU, and now she's a pediatric dentist in Orlando, and just a phenomenal person that is everything that you said, my best friend, holding this family together, so strong. And I love her dearly, and she makes us all go. And, I typically, lead the family, pounding my chest, but she tells me what to do in my ear, and then I do what she says. So that's kind of how it works.
You take coaching. Two sets of twins, Mike. You want to talk about some zone coverage right there. I couldn't imagine that, man.
That's amazing. That's crazy. That's great. Now, Mike, I used to, I don't know if you know this, in Boston, NBC Sports Boston, my weekly analyst was Dr. Myron Roll. And we would just talk about all things NFL. So I just got used to calling him Dr. Roll. I can't even call you Myron. I got to call you Dr. Roll. So Dr. Roll, good to see you in this space. I've heard you, and we never talked about this when we were doing football coverage on Sundays. I've heard you make a couple of references to your faith. Tell us about that journey and how maybe what some of the milestones are, some of the revelations are for you, because it sounds like that informs pretty much everything that you're doing.
Absolutely. You know, when I was 10 years old, I had a bit of a temper. I was an angry young man. And I think it was coming from the Bahamas and growing up in a suburban white town in southern New Jersey. I would get called racial epithets at times. I would get suspended from school. I would fight. I would steal from our local grocery store. These things that people are like, wow, really, Dr. Roll, this was you when you grew up? But it really was. I did well in school and I was a good athlete, but I thought that my behavior didn't have to match anything else. I just thought I can have an attitude and do what I wanted to do. And one time I just took it a little bit too far and beat up this kid very badly. He had to go to the hospital for his injuries. He took me to court in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And thankfully, by the grace of God, I was able to walk out of that courtroom just shaking his hand, doing some community service. My parents were very, very nervous that we were going to get like deported to the Bahamas or something. But, you know, at that point, I made the pivot. I made the switch. I gave my life to Christ about a month later. And I started thinking about and thinking through things with the lens of Christianity that, you know, I have to be better. I have to do more. I know that, you know, I have a God who's helping me, looks over me, covers me, helps lead me and guide me, protects me through all things. And so that's been sort of a fuel to continue to move forward and suppress that anger and that temper that I had to be a good person, to be a good human and treat people well. And so I've never gone back to 10-year-old Meyer, and I've been able to grow from that. And I thank my faith a lot for that.
Good stuff right there. Going back
it
to
is.
The 2% way, just kind of like reverse engineering this a little bit. It reminds me of what's the proverb, how does a man eat an elephant but one bite at a time? It kind of reminds me of that sort of thing, that sort of mentality to, you know, achieving big goals. But in the reverse, do you feel that people, because this really did speak to me. As simple as it is, as it seems on the surface, this really did speak to me. Do you find that people focus too much on the 100%, and maybe that causes quite a bit of strife, quite a bit of anxiety, quite a bit of doubt, quite a bit of anxiousness when it comes to our journeys? Because instead of just focus on that the little bit at a time, we're trying to get to 80 and 90 and 100% as quickly as possible. Does that make sense?
Absolutely makes sense, and I think that is an absolute challenge that we face today. We can compare our journey and try to juxtapose what we're doing to somebody else, especially through social media. You can look to see what someone's doing. You think they have it yesterday, you think they have it tomorrow, you think they have it all done next week, and you might feel like you're not enough, that you're not good enough, that you're not doing enough, that you're not worthy. And so I think the 2% way helps break that down, move away from that noise, that background noise that could distract you or even depress you in a way, and keeps you away from comparing yourself to someone else. You don't know what they're doing in their life. You don't know the struggles, the demons that they have to face. But what you have to do is continue to move forward, have that small win, stack up those victories, and win each day. And it's actually a neuroscientific process to this too, guys. I mean, we have six lobes in our brain. One of our lobes is called the limbic lobe. And if you are able to achieve well and feel good about yourself, your reward pathway in your limbic lobe is activated, where these neurotransmitters are released and you have this feeling of euphoria, like I just did something very good. And I don't think we celebrate ourselves enough. We don't celebrate the journey through the process enough. We often feel like we have to just put our head down and just look up when a big goal happens or a big achievement happens. But that's not true. There's enough danger and depression in the world today that we can love ourselves every single day, be grateful for having the breath of life, and be grateful for being able to move forward every single day. And this book is all about that, and we're excited about it.
The doors of the church are open. Yes.
That was church and school at the same time.
I was going to say, the pandemic, I haven't been to church in a while, but the church I went to before the pandemic, they used to sing this song at the end. We need a choir here. I can't be the I can't be the choir for it, but that deserves some song.
Organist.
But let me ask you this, Dr. O, most of the time, you'll hear professional athletes generally at the end of their career and say, you know, I'm going to miss the camaraderie. There's nothing outside of football or nothing outside of whatever the sport is that can really compare to this. And most of the time, I understand what they're saying. But in your case, I mean, you have a team working with you. You're saving lives. That euphoria that you just mentioned, I'm sure, is there when you help somebody who came in a lesser condition. You made them better. How does it compare? I mean, I would imagine it might be greater. Dare I say, is it even greater than a sports achievement?
No question about it, Mike. I mean, I think that, you know, having the opportunity to operate on someone's brain or someone's spinal cord, it just feels like you are blessed that you have this moment where somebody is vulnerable, have nowhere else to go and nowhere else to look. And here they are on your operating table with your attending or your colleague, and you have the chance to save this life or help cure an ailment that they might possibly have. And working through this science, this discipline of neurosurgery, is giving me profound perspective on life in general. You know, we have people who are walking dogs the day before and out at church the day before, and then for some reason have a stroke or get hit or fall or something like that, and their whole life is changed. You know, how they breathe, how they eat, who sees them, if they're going to be able to walk again or talk again, that's all change. And so life is so precious, and the ability to help bring people back from the brink of death or the brink of just severe pain or severe disability to a sense of a meaningful and a purposeful life, that does feel good. And it's very rewarding. And it makes, you know, waking up at 4:30 in the morning to get there for cases and leaving 7:30 at night, making sure that everybody's tucked away after you leave for the day. It all makes it worth it for sure.
Dr. Martin Rowe, this was certainly worth it for us. Thank you for taking the time to be our Axe Effect Interview of the Week, man. You exude such confidence. I'm confident that your next 35 years, you're going to do some incredible stuff. Thank you for sharing this story. Thank you for sharing this handbook with the rest of us.
Great.
It's another way that you're helping people. What, you got 2 years left in your residency at MGA?
That's right, 2 years. I do want to say something too real quickly that really helped
please.
Me. And you might not remember this, but when I was on my third day of my draft, you and I were texting, and I was very nervous that I wasn't going to get drafted. And you kept saying, "Myron, keep your head up, keep your head up, keep your head up." And then finally, when I got drafted, pick 207 in the sixth round, you texted me and said, "Boom, there it is." I'll never forget it. So it made me feel good. You've been with me for a long time. And Michael Holly, man, obviously we've been riding together with NBC Boston. So I appreciate you, brothers. And thank you for giving me the space to talk about this book. Really means a lot.
Absolutely.
No, it means the world to us, man. Thank you so much. We're proud
thank
of you, brother.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, we are.
Take care of them babies. Two sets of twins. Man.
Woo.
Ooh, like,
that's the next book. That's the next book.
Right? That's the 2% way. The 2x2 way right there.
For sure.
Smell irresistible. The Axe Effect.
All right, man. I'm checking Twitter here. Have you seen a Colin Kaepernick signing today?
I have not seen a Colin Kaepernick signing, but I did see a reference to more teams being interested in Kaepernick. Maybe here's my optimistic outlook for the weekend. Maybe he's considering his options because it's not just the Raiders.
Yeah, a signing is not imminent, reportedly. But yeah, we need optimism right now.
I'd love to see him with somebody.
Let's remain optimistic.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.